the College Football Fix Podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix Podcast from USA Today Sports.
Welcome back, College Football Fix. Final show of the 2023 season. And Michigan is your national champion. 15-0 Michigan Wolverines, 34-13. They beat Washington. It was a game that was probably not going to be remembered as being very well played. Certainly was not dramatic. There was a couple opportunities for Washington to do something in the second half. But at the end of the day, it was really all Michigan. They pulled away in the end. Big celebration. First national title since 1997. First full national title. They shared that one in 97. So first outright title in even longer. It was with the 40s. Michigan was really not a program that was built to win championships in the modern era of college football. And Paul, I think that makes what they did this year all the more interesting, all the more memorable, all the more special, because you know, we've just thought about college football in terms of, hey, it's the Georgias, it's the Alabamas, it's the teams that get the five stars, you know, Clemson, you get all-time quarterbacks, and that's how you win a title. Michigan did it really kind of a totally different way.
Yeah, Michigan blocks, they tackle, they control field position. They don't commit penalties. They don't turn the ball over. Turns out you can win a national championship that way, especially when, you know, you play in the Big Ten with seven of the worst offenses in the history of the sport. So they're a unique team. And I'm having a hard time putting them into, like, perspective in terms of comparison because they are that unique. They are, like you said, a different national champion than we've seen in the playoff era. That's cool. I just don't know what to make of this team. You know, still, after 15 games, I know they're an awesome team. They're a great national champion. It's a good way to end the Harbaugh era. But I don't know, really. There's not a whole lot that we're going to remember about how this team played football. You know what I mean? Because it's pretty plain. It's extremely effective, though, and I give them a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, like if you were to sit here and try to list, okay, just the 10 champions of the college football playoff era, Where would you put the Michigan team, right? I don't think you'd put them ahead of 2019 LSU. I don't think you'd put them ahead of the 2018 Clemson team. I don't think you'd put them ahead of 2021 Georgia. I don't think you'd put them ahead of certainly a couple of the Alabama teams. I don't think you'd put them ahead of Ohio State, right? But that doesn't really matter. They were the best team this year. And I think we talked about this a little bit on the field last night after the game. I think the most impressive thing that Michigan did is they converted on a season where everyone kind of knew they were all in and this was it, right? There wasn't going to be another opportunity like this. There wasn't going to be a next year. There wasn't going to be, oh yeah, well, we got the number one recruiting class coming in and we're going to get the next one. And yeah, so, you know, we're going to be competing for the next five titles. We often come to these playoffs and the winner and we're thinking, all right, well, is this just the beginning? Is this the new dynasty? How many are they going to win? This was the opposite. Like, this was the end for Michigan for several reasons. One is just, they're going to be losing a lot of guys who had been there for 5 years and it's time for them to move on. And they're probably losing Jim Harbaugh. And it's just going to be a different animal next year. And they knew all that going into this season, and they put everything into it, and they took on all comers, and they converted. That's hard to do.
Yeah, not to mention, to me, like, this is an opportunity that if – like, they had so much to play for, not just for Harbaugh, not just for the guys who came back for this moment, but for the idea that, like, they're playing for a history spot because of the way that they've been – in their words, treated all season. You know what I mean? This would have been easy. If they had blown this opportunity, it would have been all too easy to remember this team and this program just for the fact that Harbaugh was suspended for 6 games and they were in the midst of a sign-stealing scandal. They were recruiting violations, and there's potential level one violations coming in the coming months. It would have been, I mean, that's what how we would have remembered this team. They had to capitalize on this opportunity or be kind of relegated to the dustbin of things. So I credit them for taking advantage of this spot and doing what you said, because as you and I spoke about afterwards, like you said, like there's never been a champion that faced this uncertain future. I have no idea what Michigan's going to look like in 9 months. I have no idea what it's going to look like in 2 years. And we've never had that. I think you made the comparison of like, when Georgia or Alabama or Clemson wins, we say, well, how many more are they going to win? You know, are they going to win three more? How many more is Dabo going to win? Is Georgia going to win three in a row? No one's talking about Michigan that way. Not last night. Not today.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about the big picture stuff. Let's just get into the game a little bit. I don't know that I have a ton of thoughts on the game itself because yeah, we were watching it together, sitting there in the press box, and it was just hard to get excited about the things we were seeing on the field. And that was exactly the way Michigan wanted this game to go, right? They did not want it to be a track meet. They didn't want it to be up and down. And they did, I think, the thing they had to do, which is get ahead. I don't think they wanted to play from behind against this Washington team where they were going to have to try to force the issue. But you know, they got the two big runs early, Donovan Edwards, 41 yards, 46-yard touchdowns. It looked like we were headed to sort of a blowout. And then Michigan's play calling, I thought, and certainly their execution, got a little bit squirrely and kind of allowed Washington to at least stabilize itself after a really rough start.
Yeah, I mean, there was never a moment where anyone around us thought that Washington was going to win this football game. I mean, I don't think a moment existed the entire night. But, yeah, I mean, from 14 to 3 with 180 rushing yards after 15 minutes or 17 minutes, whatever it was, to 2013 in third quarter, Washington with possession, multiple chances to tie the game if they could have driven for a TD. It did feel like this is what Michigan does. You know what I mean? It's 2013. Things feel, like you said, a little squirrely. Then you look up, it's 34-13. They outgained it by 220 yards. They had 250 yards rushing, and they just dominated. That's just Michigan. And it goes back to what we talked about. This is a team that did not have a huge margin for error like these other national champions. They had to play their style, and their style was to play ugly. You know, so like if we're going to talk about, hey, what's the moment of the game that you really remember? Hey, good luck. we were there. I watched the whole thing. I don't really – there's not one moment that stands out. It's just that's Michigan.
Yeah, the moment I'll remember, it was after the game, which was actually Jim Harbaugh – kind of emerging from a sea of people walking toward the podium and seeing his parents and, you know, his dad, 84-year-old Jack Harbaugh, and Jim just, you know, gives him a big hug and just sort of picks him up off the ground. And, you know, and you kind of have this moment where his 84-year-old father is, you know, laughing like, you know, like he's almost a little kid, you know, when his son picks him up and then he picks up his mom and, you know, and she points at him, you did it. And, you know, that's a sweet, cute scene. I mean, you know, and Jack Harbaugh is, you know, I mean, he's Jack Harbaugh is great. Like Jack Harbaugh is, he's his energy for his age is like incredible. And, you know, and he's just obviously such a proud dad to have, you know, one son who's won the Super Bowl as a coach and another one who has now won the national championship and restored Michigan. So that was the moment I'll remember, I think, from the whole thing. As far as the game, I never thought Washington was going to win, but there was a moment at the end of the second quarter, beginning of the third quarter, where I thought they had a chance to turn this game on its head. And, you know, Michigan, about 5 minutes to go in the second quarter, they get it to fourth and two. They're on the plus side of the field. They're at the Washington 38. Harbaugh was initially going to punt, and I thought he should have punted. Obviously, that's a situation a lot of coaches like to go for it. It's analytics. Hey, go for it. But I just thought the way the game was going, Washington was doing nothing. They were just burying Michael Penix in his own territory. And I just say, hey, make him go 90 yards at that point. And Harbaugh calls timeout. They decide to go for it. They throw a pass to Roman Wilson. Gets deflected. And then that gives Washington the field position, their own 40. and they go down the field and score right before the end of the half. And then they get the ball coming out the third quarter, and it's like, all right, well, if Penix can take this thing and drive it for a touchdown, it's tied. Then to me, Washington might even be the favorite to win the game. But first play of the second half, he throws an interception. So that was that. And it really just spoke, I think, to what happened throughout the game, which was Washington having all kinds of opportunities. And Michael Penix, just for whatever reason, injuries, the defense he was playing, just not being sharp, the moment, whatever, he just wasn't able to deliver.
Yeah, I think it wasn't a good night for Penix. Obviously, he's battling injuries, and I think for a lot of people who weren't familiar with this game, I think they developed a lot of respect for the way he hung tight and did 60 minutes despite getting banged up over and over and over again. But I think you saw some of his limitations in terms of his ability to make things happen in the pocket, the way that he uses his feet. I think that some of the things that when I was writing about him the last couple of weeks that I would see online from evaluators, that there are some question marks about how he translates, because he needs a clean pocket. He had it against Texas and was outstanding, and can't take that away from him. Washington's passing game just was negated. I mean, in an absolute sense. I mean, I think at one point in the game, they had 17 attempts from 5 yards or from the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage, and 4 of more than 15 yards. That's just not their game. So what that Michigan forced them to do was just go rinky-dink and basically do, 3-yard little hitches and little short throws to backs and screens just to gain yardage as a replacement for a running game. That's not a flop from Kalen DeBoer. It's not a flop from Washington's offense. I think that has everything to do with how Michigan plays defense. And I know I said before that we might not remember this team for much. I do think that this defense kind of made a statement, in terms of being ranked among the best of recent memory. They had 24 trips inside the red zone that gave up all season in 15 games. I think they gave up 11 red zone touchdowns, with one coming on Monday night. So that unit was really an outstanding, outstanding unit. So this was a moment they stepped up big time, I thought, especially when this game got tight. They delivered this win for Michigan.
All of Washington's defensive backs, to me, played really, really well in the game. If they gave up a catch, they were Johnny on the spot making the tackle. That wins football games, and I think it's a real credit to the coaching. I thought the scheme was good. I think last night is a game tape that probably gets Jesse Minter, the defensive coordinator at Michigan, probably double his salary, whether that's in the NFL or somewhere else in college, as a head coach. I mean, I thought the way he schemed was phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, they want it before game day for sure, just based on what they forced Washington to do. So, yeah, Jesse Minter is a guy that, Harbaugh hasn't necessarily cycled through coordinators defensively like you would in a negative sense, but he has needed to replace guys time and time again. Not time and time again, but I think he's had 3. He's really hit home runs in the last 2, So Jesse Minter is a guy that I don't know if a lot of people outside of the Big Ten or outside of Ann Arbor are really familiar with, but, yeah, that's a vintage, go get paid by Michigan or somebody else kind of performance. So they maximize their talent. There are a lot of NFL guys on this defense, but there are no NFL guys that you're looking at who are can't miss.
They don't have an Ndamukong Suh on there.
Right. They don't have a guy who takes over games himself. I think it's the story of the entire unit. And the story of that unit is dominance. So, maybe Jesse Minter's the next Michigan coach. He's not, but he'll be on those watch lists. We can put him on it.
Well, he'll probably be the defensive coordinator for Jim Harbaugh if he goes to the NFL, right?
That's a good point, right? Mm-hmm.
Which I guess brings us to the next thing we got to talk about, which is what's going to happen from here. I mean, after the game, I knew that we weren't going to get very much insight from Harbaugh about his future. He's kind of had the same statement all along. I think he said something along the lines of, can you guys just let me enjoy this one? Can a guy have that just one day? And I actually don't disagree with that at all. And I would never expect Jim Harbaugh to come into a press conference there and say, here's what I'm going to do. And the reality is he may not fully know, because the NFL coaching cycle is just starting. It takes 2 to tango. There's got to be somebody willing to hire him. He's got to be willing to look at the situation and want to go. There's been talk about the Chargers, which would make some sense. There's some talk about the Raiders. There's more jobs coming open. I just think the way this all played out, he gets there 9 years ago. You know, he immediately improves them, but then they just keep losing to Ohio State, you know, year after year after year. They sort of look like they're going the wrong direction. The COVID year was a disaster. It looked like he might even get fired. And then, boom, they turn it around. They build for this. He wins him a national championship. Like, as much as I would like for him to stay in college football, because I think he's interesting and he's just incredibly colorful character that the sport needs, if I were advising him, I would say go. Because yeah. You've done your job at Michigan. You did everything you said. You've done everything anyone could have hoped for and more. And now you've got this future where you're going to be losing huge parts of this team, and you've got two NCAA investigations going on, and you're almost certainly going to be suspended again and face all these other penalties. Like, yes, just go. That's what I would tell him to do.
Yeah, there seems like no doubt this is time to go. Of course, someone's got to hire him. But, yeah, he should probably go. Not probably, he should go for himself. Look, I think he said something really telling last night. And, again, you can never know with Harbaugh because who knows. Personally, I think 99.9% of the things that he says are funny to him and designed just to make himself laugh. Like all this stuff, he talks about wolves and about all this stuff. It's just, he thinks it's funny. It's kind of a game to him, and I love that about him. But I think he said something that was true late in his presser yesterday, which was last night, which was like, you know, my dad had won national championships. My brother had won one, and now I've got mine, you know, and I can sit at the table with them. So why come back to Michigan then? Like you've got, if that's something you brought up organically that was so important to you, what's the reason to come back? Like you've done it. You've done what you wanted to do at Michigan. You brought your program back. You won a national championship. You've got a lot of stuff hanging over your head. I mean, take the Washington job if it comes available. Just don't go back to Michigan. You know, I can't see a scenario where it makes sense for him to go back to Michigan. What is left for him to do? There's nothing left. You've done it. It's time to go.
Yeah, I think you're right that there's probably been something psychological, you know, buried deep in there. He lost a Super Bowl to his brother when he was with the 49ers, right? You know, I know he loves his brother. Obviously, you know, John came down and during the game, actually, like, gave him a hug. That was kind of funny too. And I have no doubt they have an unbelievable, you know, brotherly relationship. But, you know, he got extremely close and came up short against his brother. And, you know, I do think there is, as successful as he's been, there's got to be something in there that's competitive. Just as I'm sure there was for John Harbaugh. I mean, John Harbaugh probably, you know, lived most of his life a little bit in the shadow of his brother, who was people don't really talk about this. Jim Harbaugh was a really good NFL player. Jim Harbaugh had an incredible career as a quarterback. Captain Comeback.
He was an outstanding college quarterback. And I think that's something people will remember even less, how good he was in college.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was one of the most efficient passers in NCAA history when he retired. So yeah, he was an outstanding player and he's been an outstanding coach. To your point, yeah, I mean, but John for his whole life until the early 2000s or whenever he took the Ravens job, mid-2000s, like he was Jim Harbaugh's younger brother or older brother.
I think he's older, right?
Older, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, you know, whatever the dynamic is in the family, that comment did catch my attention as well. It sort of indicated that it was something he had been thinking about. That this is his now piece of that deal, right? That he's a national champion. And I don't think it's a secret. He'd like to go try to win a Super Bowl, you know, very, very hard to do. If he was able to do it, you're talking about four names: Barry Switzer, Jimmy Johnson, Pete Carroll. Those are the three who've won the national championship in college and the Super Bowl. And then potentially Jim Harbaugh. So, yeah. And I'm sure he'd be successful if he goes to the NFL because he's never He's never been unsuccessful as a head coach.
You just got to take what it, you got to accept what it is. You got to accept what it is. And credit Michigan for accepting what it was for the last 3 years, and especially this season, because the payoff is pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet. But, you know, I guess the question for me, Dan, like looking forward, if he does leave, what's the legacy of Jim Harbaugh as a college coach? Assuming his college career is done, he's not going to coach somewhere other than Michigan, I would think. What is the legacy that he leaves behind? Is it the scandal? Is it the championship?
Yeah. Well, that's tough. Tough to say. And it speaks to the reason I wrote what I wrote after the game last night, which is if you just sort of take all the other crap away from it, this is the story that everybody wanted, right? It's not Ohio State, it's not Alabama, it's not Georgia, it's not all the teams we expect. You know, it's not the team full of five stars that, you know, that killed it on signing day. I think there was one top 10 class represented in this group. You know, you're talking about, you know, old school fundamental football. It's a team that had, you know, come up short in the playoff for two straight years, and then everybody came back and they said, all right, we're going to run this back one more time, and we're going to close the deal. And they did. Like, there's all these elements that people should have been embracing, you know? And I just feel like because of all the extra stuff and the controversies, it's not going to be as embraced, and he won't be as embraced as probably should have been.
I mean, if you look at the entire body of work, I mean, going back to Stanford, this is an elite college coach in the history of the sport. I mean, what he did at Stanford, what he did at Michigan, just on the record, you know, I mean, it's historic. It's not Saban level, you know, it's probably not even Pete Carroll level. But I think Harbaugh as a coach, like, I think it just really struck me this season, especially on Monday night, that he really is as good as people say he is. You know what I mean? He really is as good. He is that good of a coach. And it's weird. Like, I don't see him as a cuddly coach. I see him having a good relationship with his guys, but I don't see him as like necessarily the, I don't want to say like he's not the most beloved guy, because I can't say that, but he's not Mac Brown. He's not like Mr. Cuddly, Mr. Nice that guys seem to love. He just seems to have struck a balance with this group, especially after hiring a younger staff, delegating some responsibility where, you know, maybe he's changed enough to the point where, you know, he goes to the NFL and he doesn't, you know, flame out in 5 years and piss people off and destroy, you know, his second chance of running a program. I don't know. I just think as a college guy, if he never comes back, the legacy is that he was one of the winners of this generation of coaches. I know that's a silly thing to say, but he just knew what it took to win. He knew how to build a winning program. It's not easy, as we know. And Harbaugh is borderline master at it, at those two stops.
Yeah, and it's not easy at Michigan. You know, everybody talks about Michigan being the all-time leader in wins. There are hundreds of those wins if you go back, you know, against the East Lansing YMCA, you know, back in the day. To me, that stuff means nothing. I think you look at what has happened since integration, right? That's sort of where I always draw the line in college football history of what's relevant. Anything that happened before integration to me just isn't that relevant. So, and it's not been easy for Michigan. They had some runs, you know, but like Bo Schembechler was not, you know, people talk about him as being this legend, and I guess he is, but like it's not like Bo Schembechler was Nick Saban, okay?
No.
You know, Lloyd Carr was all right. You know, but they've had some bad coaches at Michigan. Like Rich Rodriguez did nothing there. Brady Hoke, nothing. Like, it's not just automatic that you show up and win like it is at, say, Ohio State, where pretty much the baseline at Ohio State is going to be top 10. you know, that any sort of replacement level coach can essentially do that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Bo Schembech was closer to Lou Saban than Nick Saban, to be quite honest. Nick Saban won more national championships in a 4-year span than Schembech won Rose Bowls, I think. So it's not like, but I mean, but again, that I'm not, I am saying that to belittle a Michigan legend, but I also think it speaks to your point. What Harbaugh has done is not like, oh, this is what Michigan should be. Like, oh, okay, so finally someone cracked the code. No, like it's been, it had been 75 years since they won an unshared national championship. You know, that's fewer than, name it. I mean, fewer than Clemson had from between 2016 and 18. You know what I mean? Like, that, like, and I, like you said, like, we talk about the win total, which is beefed up from, you know, pre-World War I time. We talk about, you know, all-time winningest program, talk about the consistency. But, like, this is not to diminish what Michigan achieved. It's actually to highlight what they achieved last night, what Harbaugh achieved. Michigan has not been this good in 75 years. Like, they have not had a team this good in 75 years. They hadn't done this in 75 years. I mean, do we have 50 states 75 years ago? Yes. Yes, we did.
Yeah.
We did. Yeah, obviously. Okay. But, like, we were thinking as we had not had the the Cold War was just starting 25 years ago, if I remember correctly. So things have changed dramatically. So this is not a program that, like, deserves this or warrants this or is, has this as a birthright. They just went out and took it, and that is a good thing. I'm saying that as a positive thing, and not as a negative thing. You know, Bo Schembech to notwithstand.
Well, if Harbaugh doesn't come back, it'll be interesting to see what they do. There's going to be obviously a lot of conversation about Sherrone Moore, the offensive coordinator. There's probably some other names that will get, you know, talked about, you know, Lance Leipold. I mean, there was a thing a little while ago where one of the LSU insiders type people was saying, hey, if Harbaugh goes, Brian Kelly would be interested in the Michigan job. He would leave LSU for Michigan. I don't know that Michigan would hire Brian Kelly or that he should. I don't know that he should go. But, you know, so – we'll see. I would probably put my money on Sherrone Moore for a variety of reasons. You know, it's continuity. I mean, Michigan has never had a black head coach. I think there's just a lot of things that would sort of line up and point toward him. And obviously, he did a very good job for those three games when Harbaugh was suspended. So we kind of got a look at it. I don't know that he'll do well, but running the program, I think it's going to be big shoes to fill if that's the way it goes. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but you know, hopefully we'll have some clarity on this within a week.
Yeah, I would think it'd be pretty soon. Yeah, I mean, Sherrone Moore is the obvious pick. I just, Michigan, your job comes open, well, more often than you would have liked in the recent past, but this is an opportunity to hire a coach to inherit a national championship winning team. It's been a long time since something like that happened. So this is a chance to take over a title team that's built pretty strongly, has a really strong locker room, obviously a tremendous amount of support. I don't know. I probably would make a few phone calls at the very least just to see who was available or who would be interested and who I could get before I promote someone from within the staff. I mean, I understand the appeal of doing that, but also if you're single and you're red hot, you know what I mean? Might want to play the field just a little bit.
What do we think about the future of Washington? They're obviously, you know, they would not have been expected to get this far in the preseason. They won a lot of close games. They were very impressive in the way they handled everything thrown at them this season. They're going to lose Michael Penix. They're going to lose Adunze. They're going to lose a lot of folks as well. You know, Kalen DeBoer was kind of a fresh face on the scene nationally. We didn't really know a lot about him. I think we learned a lot, certainly about his coaching. I'm not sure how much we learned about just him as a personality. I mean, he's kind of an understated, you know, South Dakota guy, came up the hard way in the business, coached NAIA ball, you know, and suddenly lands at Washington in year two. He's got him in the national championship game.
Yeah.
You know, is he sort of now one of the star guys in the profession? What do we think is going to happen there? They're obviously going to the Big Ten next year, which is going to change their world a bit as well.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's going to be a TCU situation. And anyone who expects Washington to drop off the map, I think is discounting, you know, the way that they've recruited, which has been solid to a little bit better. And the fact that DeBoer's track record to me is just, I don't know. I just don't see a guy who has been this successful everywhere at everything that he's done in his profession. All of a sudden, like, you know, 2 years in, losing, quote unquote, you know, the guys he inherited and then dropping off the map. So I think we need to temper things a little bit. Like, you know, there's a shift to the Big Ten, like you said, losing a lot of talent. But schematically, he's elite. That's what everyone says. They do have young players on this roster who could compete. I just feel like, you know, if you go into next year, I would peg them as like an 8-win team. I think that's really fair. But again, like, I'm just not going to discount DeBoer and his track record. I think that speaks for itself.
All right. Any last thoughts on just the playoff overall? Obviously, it was going to be hard to live up to the standard, I guess, of the semifinal games, which were basically all time close, dramatic performances. You know, we're going to 12 next year. I guess it's going to be a plus. I do think the one thing that I'm a little curious and cautious about is just, make you know, these top teams playing three games. Like, it's going to change a lot, and I don't think people have fully accounted for just the vast difference physically and the toll it takes on a team to go from playing, you know, two elite opponents in the semis and finals to three in a row. I think that's going to be hard, and I do think it's going to even probably highlight the differences between the teams that have a lot of depth and the teams that don't, because like we saw with Washington, they got banged up in that Sugar Bowl, and it absolutely affected how they played in the final. I think we're going to be seeing that all the time in the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, that's a really good point about injuries. I was thinking it's not just going to be three games in a row. Like, just think, if you're the SEC runner-up, you're playing four of the best teams in the country in a row in a 40-day span. You know, from the SEC championship, well, a little bit more than 40, but from the SEC championship to a quarter to a semi to down the line. So there's one thought I had, I guess, which is not really germane to your question, is that Michigan might be the last, like, unbeaten national champion we have, you know, because it's going to be so hard to navigate through this thing with this many games and do all that. And not to mention the fact that you may have a team that NFL style says, hey, this game doesn't really matter too much. So let's dial it back a bit late in the season. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but obviously you're concerned about that. You know, this year's playoff, I thought, lived up to expectations because of the semis. But my bigger picture thing, Dan, is the last 2 years as 14 playoff, we had TCU and Washington play for the national championship. You know, this year's playoff, you know, semifinals had Michigan, Alabama, Texas, Washington. So I know we're saying goodbye to the 14 format. I just thought this year, the past few years, really, to me, brought it to light just how awesome this format has been, just how incredible the 14 has been. I'm sure 12 is going to be fantastic and unforgettable and make this 14 look like the BCS, but the 14 playoff has been really, it's just been awesome, Dan. It's been 10 games, 10 series, and it's just lived up to every single expectation, even exceeded it. It's been that transformative. So I'm excited for 12, but that's not just like poo-poo 4. I think 4 has been awesome for the sport.
Yeah, it has. And I think had we gotten more like this year, it might not have been in such a hurry to expand. You know, so we'll see. You did a preseason top 25. For next year, what, tell us a little bit about that and kind of what you expect.
So I did that with Eric. What we really came down on, well, first off, what I'll say, we got Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, Texas, Notre Dame, Ole Miss, or Miss Ole Miss, Notre Dame is our top six. And I feel pretty good about that. I think Ole Miss is a team that you're pegging a lot on because of transfer portal additions, the fact that they've gotten, you know, they won 11-2, beat Penn State, Jackson Dart's coming back. I don't really trust that team. We've talked about Kiffin a lot. Like, he's a hard coach to really trust to deliver against the best teams on his schedule, but that's a pretty good top six. But overall, I think the theme is, you know, I think it's 16 of the 25 are Big Ten SEC, you know, and that's counting those teams that are joining UT, OU, Oregon, Washington, USC. So that's not unexpected, but when you see it on paper and you read that file, it really strikes home that there's college football in those two leagues and there's everything else. And those are just dominant leagues. They're going to just dominate every single aspect of the title race next season. Nine of the top 10, by the way, from those two leagues.
Yeah. It's going to be strange because the standings are going to look weird. The schedules are going to be weird. I think it's going to be very hard to sort of measure teams against each other within the same league because they're going to be playing different schedules and often not a ton of common opponents. I just don't really have a great sense of how it's going to go. Like, are the arguments going to be about 10, 11, 12, 13? Are they going to be about seeding? I mean, think about this, and they haven't approved the new format, but like next year, you're going to have a Big 12 champion who, you know, might not be that good, or that's the wrong way to say it. Might not be a team that anybody really considers a national championship contender, right? They're still going to get a bye, you know.
They're probably
going to get a bye in the first round because they're going to be the fourth ranked conference champion, you know. So, and yet, you know, let's just say it's UCF, right? And they're going to be playing somebody, and they're going to be a big underdog to them. Like that, those are the kind of things that are going to happen, and people may not like. I think there is going to be definitely some trial and error. I think they may need to adjust some things. I guess I'm looking forward to it because I kind of get excited about something new, something different, some change in chaos into the system. I will say this. I wrote a column last week that just sort of lamented – talked about the, kind of how sad it is in a way that like regionalism is going away in college football. Like you can't really just be like, oh yeah, Big Ten, Big Ten, Big Ten, when you've got a league that, you know, it's got Oregon and USC and Rutgers. Like, it just doesn't make, there's nothing that really connects you there, right? Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of response to that. Like I got a lot of emails, people just being like, yes, thank you. This is exactly how I feel. You know, I'm sad this is going away. I don't know. Like, I do think there's some real, I don't want to say danger, but there's definitely some things that could not be better than what they are now.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure if college football is Apple or Enron, honestly, at this point.
Yeah.
There's a lot to say it's Apple. Like, this sport is the second most popular in the country. You have nights like Monday where everyone's watching. You know, you have Saturdays throughout the fall where it's the dominant thing going on from coast to coast. Then you have the issues that are just extremely unresolved. You have the uncertainty about, you know, paying players, about revenue sharing, about NIL, and about how, just in terms of gameplay, about how fans stay invested when you're Rutgers playing SC or the roster changeover. Your 28% of your team is gone every single year, no matter what. Even more. So there's some issues here for college football that definitely need to be addressed. But overall, I mean, the future of the sport seems to be in pretty solid shape.
All right. So I'm headed out to the NCAA convention for the rest of the week, which is out in Phoenix. They're going to be talking about a lot of different things. There's a huge amount of attention on this proposal from Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, about $30,000 in a trust fund for athletes as part of this new division. We're a long way from anything happening. I'll be curious to get on the ground and see kind of the shape of that debate, what it looks like, what it sounds like. But what are, I don't know, is there anything you're really dialed in on as we get into the off season?
Dialed in to a little sleep.
Yeah, for sure.
We're going to start doing basketball. Are you familiar with the sport basketball on the collegiate level? National Collegiate Athletic Association basketball?
I
haven't done much research into it. I have to Google this.
Supposedly,
they play sports.
I have watched some already. It's the time of year where I really start, you know, getting more familiar with some of these teams as we get ready for conference play. And you know, March Madness is definitely a time where everybody pays attention. I would not probably be able to pass a trivia, you know, quiz on most of these teams right now.
Yeah,
because I haven't watched enough.
Yeah, me neither. Okay, good to know.
I do know Houston's very good. We've been in Houston for the national championship game. Mm-hmm. They are kicking everybody's tail right now.
Go Houston. Go Houston as the city, kind of, too. It's an okay city. It's better than Indianapolis, as we talked about last time, but it's an okay city. It's okay.
There's a lot of things going on in Houston. The problem is just when you're coming in for an event like the championship game, things get kind of spread out. It doesn't really feel like it just sort of disappears into the city. It's just there's too much. It's too big. It's too spread out. There's too much going on. So, it just doesn't really feel like it does in a smaller place where everything's more centralized around like a downtown area. It just feels like this big party. I think it's hard to sort of replicate that in Houston, but had a good time. Nice venue for the championship game. And obviously Michigan will remember it forever. All right. That's where we're going to leave it for now. Not sure exactly what our schedule is going to be as we move forward. We'll have to talk about it more if we're going to do some of these in the off season or not. But if not, I definitely appreciate everybody listening along, following along this season, reading all of our stuff at USA Today Sports. We certainly enjoyed it. How many more months, Paul? Eight more months or seven and a half more months?
7.5 more months. That time will just fly by. It'll just fly by. Hopefully we have a country. Hopefully we have a future.
Absolutely.
Yes, hopefully we have a future. I'm in favor.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this season, the 2023 season. Michigan's your national champion. Congratulations to them and their fans. For Eric Smith, our college sports editor, for Paul Meyerberg, I'm Dan Wolkin. Thanks all season for listening to the College Football Fix.
The College Football Fix podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix podcast from USA Today Sports.